So we're here with Wally Mead, System Center extraordinaire. How are you, Wally?
I'm doing great, Brett. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. You enjoying the conference so far?
I am. It's been a very good 2 days.
Cool. So you've been doing a bit of a tour around Australia as well. You've enjoyed your time here in Australia?
I have. Weather's been good. All the customer and partner visits have been good. Company excluded. You've been a great host.
Thank you. I like to think that. So you haven't been bitten by anything or, you know, attacked by any animals?
Just your mozzies, I think, as we call them. Yeah, I got a couple of bites there, but no, nothing else. What are they? Brown snakes.
The brown snakes, yeah, yeah, that was in the Twitter post that seemed to blow up Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So you've done a couple of presentations this week, and I really wanted to show people the one about Current Branch and what's in Current Branch. We know that 1702 was released. 1702? Yep, was released just last week. So I think there was a really good time to be able to go over and show people what's in Current Branch and hear you talk about some of the really cool stuff that they've put into the product.
Yeah.
Cool. Very so let's good. Have a look.
Alrighty. Well, we already know who I am, so I guess we can skip this one. But so what's in Current Branch? So what I started off with is I polled people how many people are still on ConfigMan 2012, and a few people raised their hands. So still had a few people in the audience that were there. Nobody admitted to be on 2007 yet, so I think they were afraid to admit that. But
I think I'd certainly be afraid to admit to Wally Mead that I was still on 2007, that's for sure.
I said, well, I'm not going to embarrass you by asking who's still on SMS 2003.
Yeah,
so they all got a good chuckle at that. So why would you want to move off of the earlier platform 2007 or 2012? So the first thing is I let people know that, as you mentioned, it just got released, and the product group is just phasing it out in different rings right now to customers. So not everybody has access to it. That I talked to this week, only one person had it already. Mm-hmm. A couple of people are asking about the way to get it right away. So it is out there. But the first thing on the slide is that they need to be aware of that they've deprecated support for some of the prior operating systems and SQL Server versions. They'd announced it a year ago, and they were going to get rid of Windows Server 2008 and 2008 R2 support like 6-8 months ago, but through the telemetry data they get from the product, it told them there's still a whole lot of people still using it, so they waited until 1702 to deprecate support. Now with that said, 1702 still allows you to run a distribution point on Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2008 R2, as well as a state migration point on Windows Server 2008 R2. But if you stay on a prior release like 1610, 1606, it's still supported. So, but if you want to go to 1702, realistically, you got to make sure your site server, most of your site systems are off of Windows Server 2008 and up to 2012 or 2016, which they do support upgrade, in-place upgrade of the operating system now on site servers.
Yep. Also, and that's a fairly safe thing to do, an in-place upgrade on a site server?
Yeah. So they started documenting that and supporting in 1602. So it's been a full year now that they've been supporting that. And I believe they just announced support for upgrading from Windows Server 2012 R2 to Windows Server 2016.
Nice.
So, yeah. And the other thing is they've dropped support for Windows Server SQL Server 2008 R2. So the same scenario, you got to be on a later release if you want to be on 1702. If you want to stay on that release of SQL Server, you got to stay on a prior release of Configuration Manager as well. And then lastly, is Windows XP Embedded has been dropped as a client platform as of 1702.
Aww.
Go to Windows 7. I know as you know, Windows XP was not supported at all in Current Branch, so it's been over a year that XP Embedded's been supported, that the XP platform hasn't been. So just because of all the ATMs and point of sale systems and so on.
So that's it, right? Most people that have Configuration Manager installed, XP Embedded's not really in their wheelhouse, but those companies that do have XP Embedded, it is something that's extremely important to them. So ATMs, for example. So,
correct.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a key one to recognize for those companies.
Yep, that it is. Okay, so now on the next slide, we start getting into the features. So one of the really cool things that's going to help out a lot of people is the ability now to bind your software update points to boundary groups. Mm. You've been able to do that for distribution points forever in Configuration Manager. And then in 1511, they started doing that same thing with management points. And now with 1702, your software update points will be bound to the same boundary group. So you have a remote location, you know, we're here in Melbourne, maybe in Sydney, where I got a pocket of clients. So I'll put an MP up there, I already got a DP up there, put my software update point, so all that client traffic stays local. So it's not going to across my WAN back here to the data center here in Melbourne. So that helps a lot. Now they need to be aware of the fact that in 1610, they changed the boundary group configuration, so now you can designate your, what we kind of just refer to as fallback period for a distribution point. If the client can't find its content on its local distribution point, it can access other DPs and other, what they call neighboring boundary groups now. That's not implemented yet for software update points or management points, so it's still the normal fallback mechanisms that they have that, but you can still, clients will bind to them and use them in their local boundary group, so that's a cool thing. That'll help get rid of secondary sites.
Nice.
Yeah, they have some in-console search improvements, so make it easier to do searches, and moving searches from one node to another node shows the path of where you found the object, which it was always, might show you the workspace, but never the path of things, so it's kind of hard sometimes to find things. So some cool updates there, and the last thing on this slide is sending feedback. So the product group really wants feedback from customers, and obviously it benefits the customer by sending feedback in, because the product group knows how they use the feature, what they need to have in the feature. Now you can directly from the console, you can right click on an object and say feedback, or up on the ribbon, click feedback, and it'll take them directly to user voice. So directly to user voice, they fill in their feedback, hit submit, and then other people are able to vote it up or whatever they want to raise the visibility and the awareness in the product group.
Yeah, and so feedback, you know, being a bit of a skeptic, you know, getting that sort of feedback to Microsoft, sometimes it can feel like it's just going into a big black hole, and maybe Microsoft aren't really taking this seriously. But the user voice site for people to be able to provide feedback really is critical to Microsoft to produce the right kind of product, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is. And we heard that complaint all the time back in the days when Microsoft were using Kinect as a feedback mechanism, that everybody said, oh yeah, I file things on Kinect, they go into the black hole, or what do they call it, file cabinet 13, the trash can. But certainly, and from the product group perspective, because I was there, I knew that that wasn't the case. Just that the product group didn't do a real good job of following up with the customer who submitted the feedback in Kinect. User voice is a different matter, though. They definitely go look at the items that are submitted and the number of votes that are on them. So everybody should go out to user voice and looking to see what items are there and pick and choose the ones they're interested in and make sure they vote on those to raise the visibility in the product group. They certainly do look at it.
Okay.
Yep. All right, on the next slide, a cool thing that for those that know Service Manager, there's a data warehouse in Service Manager. So the ConfigMan product team wanted to have a data warehouse as well to offload some of the historical data out of the database so it could be groomed a little bit better, but some people want data retained longer. So they've implemented a data warehouse service point so it can offload some of that historical data off your ConfigMan database, so you can trim it down. But then they also have a set of reports designed specifically for the data warehouse. So that's a cool thing to help offload some of that historical data for you. There's a content library cleanup tool, so every once in a while somebody will have a DP that's got content that's been orphaned on it. So the package or application's been removed from the console, but somehow a DP got left on there. Maybe the connection was down when they tried to remove it or whatever. So this tool lets you go out there and analyze your content on DPs and find out, oh, that package, it shouldn't be there anymore. And then you can go ahead and just analyze that, or you can go through a delete process to clean it up.
Very cool.
For those in government, there's a OMS connector for the Azure Government Cloud. So people are excited about that are obviously in that space. And then the next thing is they implemented a thing in 1610 called Peer Cache. So the ability of a workstation, a client downloading content to its local ConfigMan cache, and then sharing it out with other clients that want that same cache so they don't have to go find a full DP. So that was implemented in 1610. Now in 1702, they have some security setting, not really security settings, but more impact performance settings on that. So if my Peer Cache source computer is low on battery or high CPU or high disk utilization or no more connections, it won't be offered as a Peer Cache.
Right.
So the client won't be out there trying to access content that it's not going to be able to get because the computer's too busy.
Right. So very good for those organizations that are spread out that do have quite a lot of branch locations that they use.
Yep. So kind of competing with the 1Es and the Adaptivas in that scenario. But it doesn't have all the intelligence that those guys have for monitoring the network as well. But a great way of when you have remote locations of getting content out there without having to worry about a whole lot of distribution points. It doesn't compete with branch cache. It's kind of complementary to branch cache or your full distribution points. The pure cache source disappears as a full DP when it has announced that content it has on it. On the next slide, a cool thing that they're introducing is the ability of, designating a blocking program for an installation of an application. So I can run an application or try to run an application installation, and it might be blocked because I have another program that's running that's kind of a conflicting program.
So I might have the Outlook open and I'm trying to update an add-in or something like that.
Just a common scenario I have is I use Notepad all the time looking at log files, and maybe Notepad conflicts with this other application, so I can configure Notepad.exe as a blocking program for the application deployment type. So when my client tries to run that application deployment type, depending upon whether I'm deploying it as a required program or application or an available one, I can configure it to automatically close that blocking program or just fail my installation. If it's an available application, I can state to pop up a message to you and say, hey, Notepad's running, I can't install this application. If you want to install the application, close Notepad, and then we'll go ahead and install.
And that gives the users the ability to at least save the data or something.
Right. So yeah, that's a cool thing that they implemented. Now that happens to be, and we'll see it later on in the slide, that happens to be one of the pre-release feature right now. So it's a testing feature in production environments. So. The ability of deploying, you mentioned Office 365, or Office, the ability of deploying Office 365 apps through the dashboard. They introduced a dashboard in 1610 again for Office 365 client management, and now you can deploy updates from there, client settings from there, as well as Office 365 apps from that dashboard out to your Configuration Manager clients. So expanding the scope and management of Office 365 through Config Manager. For those organizations going to Windows 10 that are staying up to date on Windows 10, the ability of supporting express updates for Windows 10.
This is a big one, I think, for anyone going to Windows 10, keeping up to date with patch management and keeping those patch management as small as possible.
Right, because as you know, the cumulative nature of the Windows update, Windows 10 update packs, they just keep getting bigger over each month. So what the express updates support will do is allow the configuration manager infrastructure to only utilize the changes from the previous month's update pack. So again, as you mentioned, smaller content going across the wire to your infrastructure and as well as down to your clients. So yeah, that'll be, as you say, a real big thing for those that are in Windows 10 environment. There was just a session earlier today talking about Windows 10 things you have to have for deployment. One of those was hardware inventory now collects your UEFI startup status. So hardware inventory automatically has a new class SMS firmware, and it will automatically tell whether or not you're utilizing UEFI at startup mode versus a BIOS startup mode. So it's easier now to identify which systems are ready to roll there and which ones are able to do secure boot and all those other features of UEFI versus the old BIOS legacy scenarios. So yeah, now we got a whole bunch of things in operating system deployment to make improvements. One of them is the ability of restarting a task sequence. So if you advertise your task sequences, make them available, user picks one, it fails, they can now back up without having to restart the entire process again.
Yeah, so anyone that's ever done OSD, I know it seems like such a minor change, but for anyone that's ever had to struggle with OSD on those sorts of things, it makes a huge difference in their day.
Yep. And so they'll love the next slide, which is all on OSD. So a bunch of things in applications, the ability of multi-selecting applications for adding into your install application task. Increasing the limit of applications from 9 to 99. So a lot more things you can do in there. In standalone media, the ability of setting an expiration so that the media will expire at a certain date and time, so maybe that OS is no longer supporting your environment. So they can't keep installing something old.
Nice.
The ability of adding different content types in there, packages, applications, driver packages, and so on. Configuring the timeout for auto-applied device driver step, because I know one customer has over 100,000 drivers in their library, so it takes a long time to do that analysis through plug and play. Your package ID is displayed in your task sequence steps. So instead of the package name, which you don't always know what it is, package ID is what people remember by, so package ID is displayed. And then tracking your Windows 10 ADK version and only allowing you to do modifications for boot images that are the same version as the ADK that you have, including being able to or not being able to modify the default boot source path of your boot images. A couple more things on task sequences, a lot of things there. The ability of marking any task sequence now is high risk. In the past, it was only operating system deployment task sequences that would filter out your built-in collections and by default not show collections had too many members in it. Now you can mark any task sequence as high risk, even custom task sequences.
So you might have a line of business application or something like that that you would absolutely not want to wipe out during business hours or something.
Right, right. And now you can even customize the notification messages going to users when you do task sequencing. So you can have your own banner page as far as title and bolded text and a couple other paragraphs of text to tell users what's going to happen with the task sequence. You can even notify them that this task sequence is expected to download 10 gigabytes of data and take an hour and a half to complete. So they have some idea, okay, maybe I don't want to do this right now. The ability of pre-caching software. So you're doing an upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10 using the upgrade operating system task sequence. You can now have it pre-cache content that the user's going to need once the OS upgrade process is done. Once they get their deployments and policies, they don't have to wait for that content to come down from the DPs. It's already been cached along with the OS operating system deployment process. So very cool. A number of things in mobile devices, a lot of new compliance settings for iOS, the removal of individual platforms or versions of Android or iOS. So now you just say Android or iOS. You don't have to worry about is it 8.01 or is it 4.2 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So just marking the full platform and supporting all the versions there. Support for Android for Work. I know there was a session here on that this week as well. The ability of deploying volume purchased iOS apps to devices where before it was only deploying to users. So now you can deploy those volume purchase apps for iOS to devices. Support for volume purchase program on iOS for education, multiple tokens for volume purchase programs. The ability of a user's adding in their own custom line of business apps into the Windows Store for Business and deploying those through Configuration Manager. And then the ability for iOS and Android of designating a device is not being compliant because they have some application that we deemed as being non-compliant in our environment. And of course, if you're not compliant through conditional access, then you don't get access to your corporate email. So they're going to quickly remove that non-compliant app. A couple more things quickly. The ability of having Config Manager alert you if you have more than 20%, so 150 of your client base, has out-of-date antivirus engines, which Microsoft updates the engine occasionally, so you want to make sure you're up to date so you're not getting hit with old stuff where there's been bug fixes on it.
And kind of important, the important thing to be alerted about.
Yes. Sure. Yep, yep. And then device threat monitoring, so a dashboard for threats on mobile devices, as well as a tab when you're looking at device status. And then Windows Hello for Business, a couple of minor updates there for certificate profile deployment and notifying users, hey, you need to do something to complete your Windows Hello for Business scenario. And then our last slide is on updates to the updates and servicing feature. That's the feature used to keep Configuration Manager up to date. So they made some changes there. First thing is they've moved the updates and servicing feature out of cloud services. Some people always got lost on where it was because it was hidden in administration, cloud services, and updates and servicing. Mm-hmm. So they moved it as a root level node right below overview now, so it's easier to find it.
Yep.
And so keep it in your face. And then it's now only going to download the most current build. So if I'm on, let's say, 1606, so there's been 1610, two hot fixes, and 1702, when I do my download, it's only going to find 1702. It's going to ignore the 1610 and the two hot fixes. So reducing the amount of traffic being generated there. Now, if somebody really wants, they can go back and say, yeah, I really want the 1610 build and the hot fixes. They can download those. And now what they're doing, they're implementing in 1702 the automatic cleanup of your old content. So instead of keeping your 1511 and 1602 and 1606 and 1610, they're going to clean up all that old content payload and only keep the most recent one. Now that's implemented in the infrastructure in 1702, but it won't take advantage of it until 1706 or the next build comes out, and then they'll do the cleanup from there.
Yeah. So it seems like a lot of those cleanup type procedures to really make sure that config manager is running as slick as possible,
as efficient as possible,
without taking up too much either bandwidth or utilization of the actual machine as well.
And administrator time to go out there and do things manually. Yeah. So they're trying to make things a lot more efficient, less intrusive on the environment, your network, as well as your server, disk, and so on, as well as administrative time, and just clean things up so it's a lot more scaled down or performant because they don't have a whole bunch of stuff to cruise through on the disk.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that, Wally. I mean, it certainly seems that there's a huge amount of benefit in going to 1702. And certainly for everyone listening to this, I fully recommend going out, having a look at 1702, get it into your environment, start to utilize some of these sorts of new features. And as we said earlier, provide that feedback to Microsoft using that feedback and the user voice area. Wally Maid, thank you very much. And we look forward to having you here next year, hopefully.
I hope that's a possibility for me, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brett.
Okay, we'll start recording. We have 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, testing here. Test.